Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Today, I'm talking with Mark Strathdee, founder of Sherpa Digital Media, a video platform designed to engage and entertain your audience. Think of a webinar platform that's engaging and catered to the individual. Mark and I talk about some of his daily habits, notebooks, his background in journalism, and how COVID-19 has made Sherpa insanely busy. We discuss the history of video and how it's changed over the last 10 years. As an example, YouTube has taught us that content does not need to be perfect to make an impact. Everyone can have a voice, and that voice can come from anywhere. His passion is to make tools for people to find and share their voice. We talk about why he still likes quality journalism, as well as the importance of being responsible for using your voice and influence. Now more than ever, COVID-19 is accelerating the move to more media experiences that are customized and streamed right into your living room. Attention is the most valuable commodity that media creators need to try and capture. At Sherpa, they use artificial intelligence to look for trends and opportunities to craft a unique experience for individuals that are looking for information about brands or products or whatever. Mark uses physical notebooks and time management to make sure that he's working on the right things. In particular, he likes to write down the night before what he has to do the next day so that he's focused on that instead of the hundreds of emails in his inbox. Mark does not want his inbox to dictate his day. He also uses his notebook as a way to do something that's just for him and not distracting any time he's trying to create something new. Now, let's get better together. Mark Strathdee, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on. I'm really quite interested in what you're doing over at Sherpa Digital Media. But before we kind of get into that, I'd like to know a little bit about you and kind of how you came to be doing what you're doing.
Yeah, and thanks again, by the way, for having me on the podcast. So I'm the Chief Executive Officer here at Sherpa, and we're a webinar and webcast platform. So you traditionally see us in the marketing and sales and communication space. And, we here at Sherpa think that we've got something really, really unique. We use a lot of artificial intelligence and really cognitive learning in order to make people's jobs a lot easier. And that is and couldn't be more accurate right now with kind of the place that we find ourselves in the coronavirus. And a lot of people working from home, if not almost everybody working from home these days. And trying to make everybody's lives a little bit easier, trying to use technology to help people go through their day-to-day and have, honestly, a lot more time to focus on family and friends and staying connected with their communities, which that has become a significant challenge. As you can probably, your listeners are probably experiencing that.
Yeah, a lot of people are.
Yeah, so we're headquartered in San Mateo, and we got started in 2011. We got started in a time where things were changing. Mobile devices were coming out of the woodwork, and video platforms were still trying to figure out that whole mobility space. Mm-hmm. So we set out in a thesis to make that world easier, and over time, we've developed quite a technology offering that's used by some of the world's largest companies. And it's been an amazing ride.
Yeah. I mean, so 2011 till now, so that's 9 years roughly.
Yeah.
Lots changed in 9 years. There's been some massive technology companies that have come and gone and things that haven't even really existed. I mean, I don't think in terms of video, I don't think YouTube was even that big, or maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a big YouTube fan, or not a fan. I don't watch it very often. But I mean, have you seen the use of video sort of evolve? Because I can't think of another time where, I mean, there's streaming everywhere. There's Netflix. There's Amazon Prime. There's YouTube. There's Venmo. I mean, there's just everyone's going to video. I mean, people are going to podcasting too, because it's a kind of a different sort of genre. But
what
have you seen is this video explosion? I mean, what do you think's really driving it?
So I think when I look at YouTube and I look at what YouTube kind of did for video, was that it taught us that content didn't have to be perfect. It taught us that we didn't have to have full studio production quality to make an impact.
Yeah.
And a voice could come from anywhere. You know, it could come from the farthest reaches of a desert to San Francisco.
Right.
And I think what YouTube did was it really opened the door to a more level playing field. And it really opened that up to almost anybody of any demographic, opened the door to any budget, and gave people a voice, quite honestly, that didn't have voices before. And I think that when you kind of look at the span of how YouTube and then social media has obviously developed over the years, that really it's really opened a door to people that just didn't have voices. And I think that when I look at video, I think that's one of my most passionate elements, is that you see people from any socioeconomic environment suddenly have the ability to reach and scale and even develop a living.
Yeah, no, you see that on YouTube all the time.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, what has really changed? So I think, one, our perceptions have changed about, you know, what content versus quality means. Mm. But I think something that's happened dramatically, really over the last few short years, is that the concept of what broadcast journalism is.
Yeah.
You look at, you know, where sources of content and what, you know, what's considered journalism has dramatically changed. And you see all the major networks struggling with that. And I think that, you know, I probably would be lying to you and to, you know, listeners here if I thought that that was a positive change on some of the. I'm not a big fan of the clickbait.
Yeah,
neither am I. I really actually appreciate real journalism. I appreciate really studying a story and analyzing. So I think that that's been a negative change. But I think on the positive side, you know, again, opening the door to a wide range of voices and people that can share true, intimate, real personal experiences with news is definitely changed. I think what we were seeing across the broadcast and cable and the media and entertainment space, so generally what we call broadcast television and entertainment motion picture and so forth, you know, we've seen a massive shift. We've seen the broadcasters now in a position where they're now going over the internet, and cable providers are dramatically changing. That footprint has radically changed the concept of what a cord cutter is.
You know,
people that are subscribing over the internet for content.
Yep.
Incredible change. I think that when we look at the last few months, certainly last few weeks, everything has changed.
Yeah.
You look at the movie studios, you know, traditional, you know, your Disney's, your Foxes coming together, and then you've got, you know, your Paramounts, and the fact that movie theaters are closed, and that entire shift of that industry to the home market, things that we thought would take decades happened overnight.
I know. It's crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
Overnight.
I mean, not even, no joke. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. That's not an exaggeration.
Absolutely. I mean, our local movie theater, I mean, you and I are in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah.
All of our local movie theaters have been closed for quite some time, and content is now coming directly to the house.
Yeah.
And I actually never thought that would happen in such short order, but I guess all it took was a pandemic.
Yeah, I know my fiance Minerva, one of the things that she's looking forward to is actually going to a movie theater, because she likes that experience. So,
me too.
You know, and there's a certain amount of that that I think is really powerful. I mean, I know movie theaters over the last decade have had just a tough time, and just like retail in general, like, you know, brick and mortar retail, it's not that it's dying. It's just that it's changing and the old models don't work anymore. They just don't. Like, you got to be online, on demand, on premise. You have to have a whole ecosystem around you so that the customer experience is just that much better, right? Because you're competing for someone's attention that's already so overwhelmed and overloaded with just about the, I don't know how many billions of hours on YouTube and whatever. And my guess is in what you do, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about that, because I think it's really important. Like, how do you get the attention of the people that you're trying to serve? I mean, you know, you've got some big, you mentioned some big companies that use your products and all that, but is there a methodology on how you get above the noise? Because there's a lot out there. I mean, with the more content, there's going to be not only more things to watch, but more distractions. How do you guys kind of raise the bar so that your content gets seen?
Yeah, that's a great question. In our world, we use a lot of machine intelligence. So we use essentially the scale of compute to look for trends and look for things that could be opportunities. And we bake that into the product so that for example, if you look at, you know, what our traditional use cases are. So if we look at, say, a virtual event. Mm-hmm. So you've got, say, for example, a CES type event that suddenly now finds itself without the ability to bring people in person.
Yeah.
And so when you look at our product as really kind of a virtual event experience, we essentially solve a very core issue, which is where people go to learn about products and services. So, for example, we replace that physical event with a virtual one and give you some of the same capabilities. And what's different with us is that instead of roving potentially an endless show floor at CES, you can be very focused on a very specific thing. So if you're interested in learning about Samsung or an Apple device or a Sony device, when our customers build these environments, they're building it just for themselves and then marketing it to their audiences so that when you attend one of their events, it's solely focused on just them. And the technology in our platform allows companies like that to learn as people experience the content online. So if you're visiting a Samsung virtual event, a virtual booth, so to speak, Samsung is actually learning a lot about you as you look at and digest different content. And as you spend certain time over here versus certain time over here, our platform is actually looking at your behavior and then helping direct you to the next thing. So rather than having a very common, bland experience that has been completely preset, it's now highly explorative. So you can actually, we actually give you a very personalized experience and access to potentially thousands of content options that are personalized for just you. So that's something that our customers really enjoy because they can really personalize. And to the point that you said earlier about how do you get above that noise? Well, that allows them to be very targeted at the individual level and deliver a very rich brand experience that normally would be a very kind of common repetitive one.
Wow. So does that include virtual reality and stuff
it
like
does.
That? It does.
Yeah. Cool. Virtual reality, augmented reality, 360 video experiences. Again, it's really kind of about that tailoring and personalization for each and every user. And now that people are at home, they are hungry for more content. I mean, it's
y'all must be pretty busy.
To say that we've grown substantially is probably the understatement of the week.
It's amazing, huh? How
it is.
How like the world can change so rapidly, and then just trying to like all of these trends that you see just accelerate by orders of magnitude. Just
absolutely
overnight. I mean, and it's funny how that works because you see a lot of these trends that are, of course, they develop. I mean, even, you know, again, we're part of the COVID, we're in the COVID time right now. So we always talk, we're always talking about COVID. But you see a lot of the macro trends in society and in economies accelerate, which everyone kind of had in their gut, like, you know, it's probably going to happen eventually, but boy, to make it happen within the next 3 months, 2 months, sometimes on a dime. I mean, I had a, someone was telling me that they ran an events company and overnight, you know, revenue almost went to zero because no one, everyone was canceling events. So I'm curious, how did you come to do this sort of stuff? Do you have a background in video, or it just seems like a very, I mean, eclectic mix of skills, so to speak.
I started in broadcast television.
Oh, okay.
I worked my way through the major networks and then had a rare and unique opportunity to go work at a very large high-tech company in Cupertino.
I wonder who that could be.
And really got a taste for the ultimate dream of TV on the internet. And really trying to, and we talked again about this kind of towards the beginning, and that is really that idea that my dream back then for TV on the internet would really be, you know, to remove barriers. Seeing how anyone could access the internet and actually stream content, stream video, actually deliver content with a unique and rare perspective, I was really excited and fascinated about that. And so I transitioned from broadcast television, fair amount actually in journalism, over to essentially the software and video world online. And that's how I kind of made the switch. And then, of course, you know, with the, you know, co-founding of Sherpa, you know, we were looking to take that and also give really the marketing and sales world a chance to be far more personalized rather than having to present always the same thing to large amounts of people, try to make it more tailored. Because again, that's kind of like, again, the same thing where you're trying to create that personalized voice experience rather than, again, a very kind of copy paste, stamp, stamp, stamp.
Version of it. It's like choose your own adventure.
That's right. That's a great way to put it.
Well, I mean, and I think that's a really powerful thing because a lot of times, I mean, you know, I go to trade shows and there's a certain nice thing about being able to like walk the floor and you feel the energy and, you know, you can like haphazardly stumble upon something cool. But, you know, I usually have like, okay, this is what I want to figure out or go see. And it is nice to have a tailored experience. And again, as that goes more and more online, I think it's only going to get more and more valuable because, again, attention is the thing I think that a lot of people are trying to fight for. And the more I think unique and tailored an experience is, just the better it's going to be. So, my guess is you're going to get even more busy.
Yeah, it's pretty much trending that way for sure.
So how do you handle that? I mean, you know, what do you do to kind of manage your time? I mean, you know, before COVID and now during COVID, but what are some of the things that have really guided you on this entrepreneur journey? Because I mean, you know, it's been what, 9 years, almost going on 10. So anything that you kind of learned through that journey?
So I think that over the years, really time management has really stemmed around kind of knowing where my boundaries are. Knowing exactly when I need to turn off at the end of the day and really know when I'm going to start things up at the beginning of a day. Essentially, I'd say, especially for entrepreneurs, we have such a passion for what we're doing and we get so excited. And that to-do list can be so endless that
it's true.
Turning that off at night, especially when you get going.
Yeah, it's hard.
You know, it's like, oh, you know, I'll just do one more and then I'll wrap up for the night. And I'll be honest. I think that learning to turn that off and creating boundaries and having mechanical things like, for example, a calendar that tells you to turn off.
Yeah.
It tells you to say, go spend time with the family because at the end of the day, you know, the people that we are in community with, our families, those are the things that, especially for me, are so critically important. And I want to keep those things very healthy.
Yeah.
And so having mechanisms that remind you to say, you know what, tomorrow's another day. And you can always put those things in the next day. And it's so funny. Sometimes some of the things that I work on, I'll just be quite honest with you. Some of the things that I work on, you know, that late night, that 2 a.m., you know, PowerPoint typing frenzy or that press release or that blog post, I wake up in the morning, I'm like, you know, that really wasn't worth missing that time to watch the movie with the girls.
Yeah, time management is important. I mean, everyone I've talked to seems to be very interested in how to be more efficient and time as well. Are there any daily practices other than, you know, time management or scheduling that you do that sort of ground you in the day or start your day off or, you know, anything like that?
Yeah. So especially in as you said, we're in the kind of the coronavirus era. So what I've had to do is when I wake up in the morning, not immediately grab my phone and start reading emails. So what I traditionally do the night before is I write down physically write down. And I have a notepad in front of me, by the way, which we'll talk about in a second. I literally write down what I need to be focused on in the morning.
Oh, okay.
So that I don't immediately go to email because when I open my email, there's 300 messages. And you know, the sky could be falling or the sky could be sunny, could be any number of things, but I don't want to start my day with a preconceived idea from the first email that I saw. So I actually write in I have a hybrid journal / notebook that, and I have now probably almost hundreds of them.
Oh, wow.
That go back now almost 15 years.
Wow.
And basically I just write right before I go to bed. I write what I'm concerned about. I write what I should focus on the next morning. And I try to go through my kind of morning ritual of breakfast and all those things, focused on what was in my book the night before, what was a priority at the end of the day yesterday, rather than being spontaneously shocked by inbound emails and so forth. I also have the great Apple device here. So there you go. I said it out loud. Yeah. That actually sets do not disturb times.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And there are only two or three exceptions in the list that are allowed to do that. My family is one, but there's a couple of colleagues here at work that have authority to disrupt that. And so if they reach out, then I realize that there's something that needs to be done that's different.
Yeah.
So I use a combination of actual technology, things like Do Not Disturb, combined with a journal that basically sets my day. Because what happens is if I don't do that, then I'm a slave to the device. I'm a slave to the next thing. And for time management, I would say that that is the biggest danger I have, because I will slip right into that world. I will slip into type emails.
Be like dig deep into the inbox, like what kind of journal is it? What's the type of journal?
I'm holding it up. It's a really nice leather journal. I actually spend real money on it. I actually also spend real money on my pens. I've got essentially these really nice pens, so that when you write in it, it has a very comforting artistic feel. In my particular world, I tend to be very lines free. None of my journals have lines in it. Which allows me to draw pictures. For example, if I'm trying to because I'm a very pictorially driven person, having the freedom to just essentially do a whiteboard in my journal to sometimes describe a thought. So rather than being focused on having to actually write out in between those lines, being freeform and saying, sometimes my to-do list for the morning are actually diagrams. So I have a wide range of ways that I kind of use this as anything from a true journal to a sketch pad to actually to-do lists.
Wow.
And I allow myself to be flexible the night before to say that, you know, it doesn't always have to be the same thing. And and I have actually at home, in addition to this journal, I have a giant actual canvas-based 11x17 version that I use for much larger brainstorming ideas.
Oh, okay.
And I have a few of those.
That's pretty cool. Cause see, my fiance Minerva, I think they're called Leviton. I think they're these Leviton item planners, and she just loves these things. And so it has got all these inserts, and it's, you know, free form. Mm-hmm. It's got mind maps, and she loves pens too. She's like really loves good pens, but good pens that aren't like super expensive. So not like a Mont Blanc pen, more like a gel throwaway pen that feels good. So her whole thing is she likes to write it down and feel it and draw. So really interesting that is part of your process too. I tend to try to do that as well, like the sketching and the drawing. I don't have a really nice physical journal, although she's bought me a couple. I'm actually probably going to start doing it more, because I kind of like that feeling. The tactile feel, because I write a lot of books and I write a lot of podcasts, and, you know, what I do for my day jobs, a lot of writing and creativity and messaging. And what I found is that whole getting it on the page process of taking it from my head and sticking it on the page, it's frees me. I feel like I feel better. Is that how you feel about it too, when you write these things down?
Oh, I sure do. In fact, it's so funny. What I would write in a journal versus an email that I would write, entirely different. You know, I look at email and I look at that as a very cold.
Yeah.
A very interesting, a very flat, non-emotional communication tool versus my hand with a pen and an open sheet of paper is an entirely different thing. It's a very personal thing. And so I find that the digital tools that surround me, and I have a lot of digital tools throughout the course of my day, a lot of different tools. but when it comes to this journal, it's a very personal thing. And it's something that travels with me all the time. It's on airplanes. Not so much now these days. I'm not traveling.
Right.
But, you know, it travels with me in the car. And it's something that is non-distracting. I know that when I open it, there's not going to be 100 messages from somebody else.
Oh, good point.
So
good
point. It is a very focused tool. And I almost hate calling it a tool. But the only person that is contributing to this is me.
Yeah. Oh, I really like that. You know, I never thought of it that way, because one of the things that is like, so when I'm like at a meeting, I'll tend to doodle, and I'm not a very good doodler, but I want to learn how to doodle better and like draw little things. Cause I'm more and more people are asking me, well, how would you visualize this? And I'm like, I really don't know. I can write the copy around it, but visualization's a lot harder, you know, but when I'm like listening to someone for whatever reason, and I may write notes, but I may never read the note, but the act of moving the pen, drawing a little thing, writing a note, like the physical, I remember it more. I don't know why. I mean, I'm sure there's some studies that say why, but
I'm sure there is.
It feels better. I think it's that just that tactile thing, which I think we miss a lot with these devices, right? Because, you know, I love my iPhone, Apple. Of course, I have one. I got a Mac. I've got, you know, I'm a fan, right?
Sure.
But I remember what I try to do at night now is I try to read a physical book. And I've been doing this more and more. And a lot of the people that I've talked to do the same thing. And the reason being is that, you know, you shouldn't do a lot of devices at night because of all the blue light or whatever.
Of course.
It just spins you up. And I think your point, I now finally figured it out when you said it's only me in this book or this piece of paper. No one can distract me. This is mine. And it feels like I'm in control. And I think that was the thing I didn't, until you said that, I'm like, you know what? You're right. Like, there's no distractions in my notebook. My notebook's my notebook.
Exactly.
It's there for me. It's there for no one else but me. Wow. You know, I'm like, you know what? Okay, I'm going to start writing in notebooks again, because I think it's important to have those, especially now, to have that me. You know, it sounds a little selfish, but I think we need the me. Like, what am I doing for me? And so do you think this practice of writing in notebooks and like sort of setting your day up, I mean, is there anything else that you sort of do for you that sort of sets you up to have a better day, to be a better person? I mean, you know, anything else that you could share?
Yeah, you know, I think that there is something to be said about walking the dog. So my wife and I have been married now for over 21 years, and for about 15 of those years, we've had a dog, and now two dogs. And getting out into the fresh air and leaving your phone behind when you do that. So I actually have another Apple device that happens to be wrapped around my wrist. You could probably guess what that is. But the short is having a time that is additionally disconnected, that I know that I'm spending the time, as silly as it sounds, with the dog and walking through the neighborhood and having that separation time to just take in fresh air, enjoy the sunlight, which is now even more important than ever, right? Because I mean,
for sure,
so much of our lives are kind of stuck indoors. And really having that kind of separated time where, you know, I talk with my wife about things. And it's funny, when you get out and start moving around and exercise a little bit, that clearing of the mind is an epic thing. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny, like I'll be stressed about something, and the moment I hook up the dog and go outside and start walking, it's like suddenly it's a perspective that happens there. So for the journal, it's kind of like this, you know, its job is to get my ideas and thoughts and passions and dreams and to-do lists down on paper. But the walk is all about emptying my mind, focusing on what's important, because the journal honestly will lie to me sometimes.
We sometimes lie to ourselves. That's true. It happens for sure.
But the walk is really a time where it's just this decompression. You know, you see the birds, you know, you see other people walking around. And I think that that is such a critical thing to really separate yourself away sometimes from that digital input. And so I try to do that at least once a day. We find that one of our favorite times to go out as a family is kind of in the evening right after dinner. And that's a great time where it's, you know, it's around sunset. It's just a very pretty time to be out. Mm-hmm. And just kind of seeing kind of the world around you, the creation around you, is just a really neat time to kind of like just kind of get things in perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there's studies that on that too.
I'm sure there are.
And that's so interesting, because you know what I try to do is get out as well every day. And I have my best ideas when I'm working out or doing something random that's physical, because then the mind is sort of free, and the body is, you know, getting all that tension and the nervous energy and all the like, you know. And I think that's a skill that a lot of young entrepreneurs maybe don't do as much, because they're all like, I gotta crush it. I gotta work 16 hour days, you know?
Yes. Right.
And if you get caught in that trap on that treadmill, not a good sign, because again, I think your experience, my experience, and the people that I've had on the show that have been a little older in their years, a little more gray in the beard or gray in the hair, have found that the perspective and the quiet time and the reflective thinking time was where they just got the most insights. When you are going to engage with a client, as an example, and build these, you know, interactive virtual sort of things, The process that you go through, is it like they want you to do the whole thing? Or is I guess the reason why I'm asking is because that creativity side of things, sometimes with corporate folk, sometimes they don't understand that the process is the process, and it's not like, you know, we don't know how it's going to kind of come out. We know kind of how it's going to be, but it's sort of this zig and zag, you know, within these guardrails of you know, physics and reality and budget. Sure. How does that process work for you guys? Because I can imagine, you know, with obviously the increase in demand for what you're doing, there could be a lot of pressure to sort of, I wouldn't say cut corners, because cut corners is not the word I want to use, but to not have the time to think through the creative process. Does that make sense?
You know, it does. So we take a very, and when I say we, I say Sherpa as a company, and this is instilled into every single one of our team members, by the way. We take a very, what we call, consultative approach, and we never demo in first contact, ever.
Okay.
And that means that it takes a little bit longer sometimes to go through a process with Sherpa. And guess what? That's okay. Because we want to understand really what your goals are and the things that are stressing you out. Video is a very stressful thing. A live event is a billion times more stressful because a lot's happening at once.
Yeah.
And unless you do it every day like we do, or every day like a broadcaster does, or like you as a podcaster, those are unique moments in time for sales and marketing professionals and communication professionals, and they don't do it every day. And so it's a very stressful thing. There's a lot of things riding. So what we like to do at the beginning of our sales consultations when somebody first comes in is to understand, what are they concerned about? What are the things that are going to keep them up at night? And we make that part of the experience with us. where we look to help them understand that we've got their back. You know, we're going to support them. And while the product comes out of the box and you can use it without actually even interacting with us, the short is that we want to understand what is going through the minds of our customers and the fears that they have, so that we can reduce that and we can show that they don't necessarily have to be afraid of those things. And so that's a big part of our process, is to really kind of help them get into the mindset that there's somebody there that has the expertise that's going to support them. So that's that is a huge part of our process. So what that traditionally means is that we've had customers that have been concerned about waking up on time for their event. You know, they might be traveling to a part of the world that they're not used to.
Yeah.
And that might mean that Sherpa calls them and gives them a wake-up call to, and you know, maybe it's dropping off coffee at their door.
Oh, wow. Huh.
You know, maybe it's picking them up and driving them to the location that they need to go to. And especially when there's a team, we often on the production services side, where we have partners that are helping with the lights, camera, action aspect of what we do, having that real personal touch from those teams and not make it so sterile. Because again, these are things that they don't do every day.
Yeah.
And in some cases, these are what we consider unicorn level events, you know, where you do two of these a year.
Yeah, yeah.
One a year, like you look at CAS and CES.
Yeah, that's once a year.
You know, those are monumental moments for them. And so those are very stressful. So we kind of look for little simple ways that we can make life easier and try to reduce the stress. Because again, video can be really, really fun. Live events can be extraordinarily fun.
Yeah.
And we really hope that that passion that we have for it gets communicated over to them, and then they actually enjoy it as well. So,
yeah, that, you know, I never thought of that. If you're not used to lights, camera, action, the setup, being on air, yeah, that could be pretty stressful. Now that I think about it, boy, I think that's an interesting way just in general to think about just customer interactions and how to interact with people in general. I really like what you said about what's their fear. A lot of behavior and a lot of conflict is generated by the other person or group's fear of either the unknown or what they don't know, or making their maybe look bad. And it's so interesting that you say that, because if the fear comes out right away and you mitigate the fear, or you reduce the level of anxiety and you make that interaction just a lot more pleasant. I mean, you know, bringing someone coffee to make sure they get to the location on time, or driving them, or giving them an email wake up, or just that's a little thing. That's like not even, I mean, you know, you guys got, huge, massive AI experience with all this technology. And it's like, you know, we really like working with Sherpa because they brought us coffee.
I kid you not. Honestly, that is like when we do these postmortems, some of the things that come out have nothing to do with the technology success or nothing to do with the campaign success. It's all like, gosh, thanks for knocking on my door that morning, or thanks for picking me up, or thanks for sending me that little encouraging note.
Yeah. Yeah.
That human touch is, I think, and that runs through our veins here.
Yeah.
And part of it is because it runs through my veins, that wanting to be kind of that interpersonal human touch, through very stressful times. And I'll tell you that our team is really focused, especially these days in Corona, on how we can do that. How can we help be part of your community and reduce the stress and burdens that you're going through, because the demands are greater now than they've ever been.
Yeah.
No doubt about that.
Well, how are you guys doing that in this sort of virtual Zoom WebEx world where, you know, you can't bring someone a cup of coffee, or, you know, I mean, I remember even, you know, in some cases, when it's appropriate, like even giving someone a hug or shaking their hand, or, you know, because humans, we need that physical contact to like know that we're being seen. How, you know, and it's funny, one of the people that I've that I interviewed before, Candace, she actually writes physical thank you notes to people that talk to her or whatever. And sometimes she can't find their actual address. So she'll take a picture of it, the physical card, and send an email saying, like, I thought of you. I wrote a card, like, again, the physical writing of something. Because she's just like, this is who I am. I feel that I'm going to want to show appreciation. So, you know, how are you and your team, and again, in this kind of virtual world, which is not very, it's good. I'm glad we have it. Don't get me wrong. It helps out a lot. But it's not like being there, you know. How are you guys? What are some of the kind of things that you guys are trying to do to make it a little more personal in this virtual world?
So, and I can't take all the credit for a couple of examples that I'm going to give here. We currently have a fairly significant side kind of multinational event that's currently running right now. And so we have an event that's running in, I think, almost every major language in the world.
Wow.
And with audiences coming from literally everywhere.
Wow.
And the customer, during the course of the consultative approach at the beginning, said, I really want to do something different for my viewers. And normally, you know, an event would be an event and, you know, people get a link in their inbox and so forth.
Yeah.
So what they decided to do, and this was no small thing, they decided that for every single attendee, they would allow them to pick from a menu, a regional dinner menu.
Wow.
And they had meals delivered to that attendee.
Man.
Everywhere in the world.
Whoa.
Just because
wow.
What they were used to, what the attendees were used to, was coming to an actual physical location
mm-hmm.
and having dinner with colleagues and, you know, actually, you know, breaking bread.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's an important part of the physical connection.
Is.
Yeah.
So what they opted to do was to provide that meal experience, that very personalized meal experience, which was safely delivered through various different meal providing services all over the world, by the way. And there were regional menus, by the way.
The menus
went from sushi to lentils.
Wow.
It's an epic amount of work that they did to create a very personalized experience. And so I could go into several other examples, but I think what is unique is when you have the time to think creatively, like you said earlier on, when you have that time to kind of get out of your head and you're not so worried about the stresses of things, it is amazing what creative things you can do. I mean, I look at people that didn't know how to sew masks 30 days ago, and the fact that they can sew masks and put that together and share that with their friends and community and friends and family and so forth.
It's beautiful.
All it takes is just kind of pushing the mundane aside for a second, and what would appear impossible 2 minutes ago is suddenly like, oh wow, now that's totally doable. And now the concept of delivering meals to every single attendee of a virtual event to help them feel more engaged in the experience. And by the way, that event is running 10 out of 10.
I mean,
people are staying engaged all the way through. The interactions are through the roof, higher than any event engagement they've ever had. But the reality is, when you have that creative time, when you push the world aside for a minute and focus on just getting your ideas and your creative approaches out on paper, or maybe it's an email, I tell you, things change. Things change.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's such a great example, because one of the things that people run into, at least that I've found, that aren't entrepreneurs, that don't have that mindset or that creative mindset, mm-hmm. is they're afraid that they won't be able to do something, where they're like, oh, I could never do, you know, pick whatever dream or thing people want to do. And what I found is fascinating, and, you know, there's a lot of bad news out there, so I tend not to want to do too much reading on the internet, because it just can make you mental. But the amount of creativity and resilience and pivoting, and I mean, it's incredible. Like, I have a friend who's pivoted within like 14 days from idea to prototype of this medical pod that's just
wow.
Amazing. I mean, incredible what his name's Jeremiah, what he did and his team. And it's just like, holy wow, this is incredible. And he, you know, you talk with them and, you know, he's a creative guy. He's, you know, lives in LA yeah. and he's like, you know, not a clue about medical stuff, but he's like, I need to do something. And you know yeah. what? I'm going to pull some things together. I'm going to see what I can do. And I think a lot of people are realizing like, oh, you know what? I think I could do this. You know, it's yeah. not that hard. And it's not, it's just the confidence. And sometimes it's the situation, which, you know, I find really interesting that in the situation we're in, some businesses are going to be so busy that they won't be able to keep up. Some are going to yeah. be completely devastated, and it's a sad thing. And then there's going to be like yeah, the people really that are, you know, going to adjust, right? And you know, as entrepreneurs and as people that are, you know, I'm busy as well, and you know, we need to help those people out. That's part of the reason this podcast exists. That's part of the reason why I do what I do, is to be of service. And I think what's really fascinating about what you're trying to do is have that service mentality, which is a lot of people have, but I do like the fact that I don't want to say above and beyond, because I don't think it's an above and beyond thing. I think it just reflects the personality of a team and a group where, you know, they would make it happen that everyone would get a meal delivered to them. They wouldn't be like, we can't do that. They'd be like, hey, that's a great idea. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And that attitude, I think, is my hope will happen more and more. So, I mean, are you seeing that? Do you feel that sort of momentum because of all of this?
I do. I see constantly people trying to find clever and unique ways to make other people's lives better. And, you know, I kind of point to the masks, but there are dozens, if not hundreds of thousands, of other examples out there where people are pitching in whatever way they can. And it's interesting watching the world kind of try to come together right now
yeah.
and watching neighbors helping neighbors. And for example, in our area here, there are people riding around on bicycles, like tech executives and, you know, I mean, everybody willing to go get people's medicine and drop it off at their door.
Yeah.
Like CEOs of major companies going out of their way during the day to help friends and neighbors that might not be able to go to the store, might not be able to do this or that. And I would encourage other leaders to truly lead by that example. And, you know, it's not that I'm trying to, you know, pull the whip out and the big stick and say, hey, do your part. That's not that's what I'm saying at all.
Right.
What I'm saying is that look for really unique ways that you can really help your community. Look for ways that if you see a need, you know, try to fill it. And again, I've been so encouraged by, you know, the stories that I've heard and even in our own neighborhood where people are looking out for each other.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I've not seen that before.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I hate to say that it was a pandemic that brought a lot of us together.
Right.
Obviously, there's still a lot of really bad, terrible things out there. As you said, I totally agree. There's a lot of really bad, terrible things out there right now. And it's a very sad time. But there's also a lot of incredible good going on right now. And that is such an encouragement to see.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's the perfect place to end. So, Mark, I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. It was a great conversation. I enjoyed the time.
All right, stay safe. We'll talk soon.
All right, you too.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also join my email list by visiting thedailymba.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest that you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about in this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Get really into your favorite shows and movies all in one place with Flex, a 4K streaming box you get free with Xfinity Internet. Find what you want with your voice on Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and more. No more jumping in and out of apps. And get Peacock Premium at no additional cost. It's a way better way to watch. Learn more at Xfinity.com/Flex. Restrictions apply. Requires postpaid Xfinity Internet excluding Internet Essentials. One device included. Subscriptions required to access streaming services.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.